3, Paul is praying, and in verse 16 he says, I pray that God would grant you, that He would grant you according to the riches of His glory. That means the grant is measured by God's own nature, so it's pretty well underwritten, pretty well endowed. It has good resources. In other words, it'll never go bankrupt. That He would grant you according to the riches of His nature, His character, His glory, to be strengthened with might by His Spirit in the inner man. So this is what he prays for first. Here's the second thing he prays for. That Christ may settle down and be at home. That's the meaning of that word translated dwell there. That Christ may have the run of the house in your hearts by faith. See, that's more than having Him in you. That's having Him in control in you. That Christ may have the run of the house in your hearts by faith. Here's the third part of the prayer. That you, being rooted and grounded in love, may be able to comprehend with all saints what is the breadth and length and depth and height, and to know the love of Christ, which passes knowing. Strange paradox, isn't it? He prays that we'll know the love of Christ, which is beyond knowing, which passes knowledge. And the last part of the prayer is that ye might be filled with all the fullness of God. Now, if you can recall very quickly, one of our premises this week is that God's power is not the kind of power we normally consider it to be. I'd answer a lot of questions, a lot of problems, if you could but hear that and understand it. We think of God's power as making things happen. And the more power there is involved, the bigger the thing that will happen. And it normally is regarded as explosive power, so we pray that God will explode situations. And that's not the nature of God's power pictured in the Bible at all. If you listen to this reading, you really can't miss the fact that God's power is character power. It's nature power. It's power for the inward person, in effect, to change that inward person, to get rid of that which is displeasing to God or anti-God, the flesh, sin, etc., and to instill or impart within the person the very character likeness of Jesus Himself. See, that's what this passage is about. You need to read that prayer very carefully with that in mind. He doesn't pray a single thing about great happenings. He prays rather that you will become matured in God's character, God's nature, and that you will have the likeness of Christ formed more completely in your life and be filled with the love of Christ. See, that's a character reality. And then the prayer closes with this little phrase, that you might be filled up full with all the fullness of God. You need to ask yourself again at this very moment the question we asked earlier, is that really possible? Is it possible for me right now to be filled with all the fullness of God, what God is and who God is? And I said earlier, our first session, our Sunday school hour last Sunday, and that makes it mandatory, makes it necessary, that we ask one giant question. What is God full of? If He's praying that I might be filled, and that's indeed a real, live, viable possibility today, that I might be filled with all the fullness of God, then that makes necessary that I ask and answer the question, what is God full of? And we gave some of those character references, not just traits, they're character realities that God is full of, such things as love and mercy and grace and character power and glory and understanding and compassion, etc., etc. And those are the things Paul is praying that I might be filled with as I'm filled with all the fullness of God. Now, I want to employ a very simple illustration. I suppose this will be the simplest illustration of the entire week. for our time together today. And I don't believe there's any way in our society a person can see this adequately enough and exhaustively enough the way things are today. I'm going to let this diagram represent your life and mine. This bar right here, form an X. See the intersection of those two bars right there, those two lines. An X in our society often represents the unknown quality and the unknown quantity. So that's a good symbol for you as far as I'm concerned, because I really don't know you that well. And that's a good symbol for me as far as you're concerned, because you really don't know me that well. Now you, many of you know me much better than I know you, because I'm on display before you much more than you've been on display before me. But nonetheless, however much we may know, we still don't know each other that well. So that could be a good symbol for us. Now you'll notice that I've also intersected the X, top and bottom, in the middle where those two bars of the X intersect. I've put another line, a horizontal line, through the middle of that. So I've divided your life by what I call a visibility line. Here's what that means. Everything between these two bars of the X above that line, in other words, everything in this triangle right here, represents every part of you that can be, in effect, computed. It can be weighed. It can be analyzed. It can be observed. It can be seen. It can be tested to sight, essentially. Now, that's the part of your life that is above this line in this triangular area right here. The part of your life that is below the line, the counterpart to that above the line, the matching part to that above the line, is the part of you that is invisible. It's the part that cannot be computed. It cannot be weighed or tested by sight. In other words, it's the inward part of your life. Now, the question is, where do you do the most of your living? Do you do the most of your living above the line or below the line? You do the most of your living below the line. You see, the expression of your life is above the line, but the very essence of your life is below the line. This is the visible part. This is the invisible part. Now, that you can see that very simply when you, if you were to observe somebody watching a television program. He may be sitting in a chair, and to sight, he is not moving a muscle. If you were to observe him, he could be seated there like he's riveted or glued, not moving a muscle. All that's moving is his eyes as they focus, and the focus is very sharp and very condensed, so you might not even see the movement of his eyes at all, so it doesn't look like he's moving at all. And yet while he's sitting in that chair, say for an hour, he may be inwardly doing a lot of vicarious or identifying living, identifying with the plot and the personnel on that screen in front of him. So it's easy to see that the very essence of life, it takes place down here. What occurs up here is the expression of life. Now, I want to analyze our lives just very generally for a few moments. Let's take what is above the line. What is above the line? That is a part of you that can be seen. This is your birth date right here, that place where those three lines intersect. That's when you're born. This represents your life from birth to 5 years of age, that little triangle right in there. Now, what characterizes a child, an infant and a child, up to 5 years of age? Well, very early, right after birth, he has three primary interests. His interests are pick me up, feed me, and change me. I had a doctor friend up in Russellville who told me, he said, Herb, a baby is nothing but a hollow tube with a mess at either end. And the interesting thing is, it's a good thing we can't remember that, isn't it? Good thing we can't remember all the way back to emergence, when we emerged into life. Because there are so many shocking things, both good and bad, in that time. It's a good thing we can't remember it. Now, our consciousness does register that, but not to memory. It registers that to experience. That's the reason sometimes people have traumatic psychological lives and don't know why, and it goes back to something that happened in their early